Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation is unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I lost the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, July the 21st. My name's Christy.
I'm Peter.
And we, Linda and Elizabeth are off today. So we're just, Peter and I are going to hold it down along with Ben, who's in the booth today. Managing everything and
hola.
Hello there, Ben. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
I love running your guys' show.
Well, thank you. We're broadcasting live from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. You can stream us online at KCNR1460.com to catch today's show and access our archived shows. Follow us on Telegram and X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. By the way, have you seen the new website? It's nice.
I have. I like the organization, yes.
Yes, it's far better than what we had there, a nice update to what was there. So last week we brought you Jack Mahlers. He's just a firecracker, CEO of Strike. And we played his full keynote speech from the Prague Bitcoin convention that they had. And it was entitled, Bitcoin, There's No Second Best. Now, I hope you had a chance to listen to that. There was a lot of good information there. We're going to break that down today here. But first, let's get a market update and a word from our sponsor.
Well, right now, Bitcoin is struggling right around the $68,000
struggling
Bitcoin mark. Well, the last number I saw was 67,781, but we've been over 68,000 as recently as 10 minutes ago. The live price for IBIT, which is the exchange-traded fund for Bitcoin, on Robinhood currently is $38.45, and on that platform it does trade 24 hours a day. Ethereum is 3,514. XRP is all the way up to 59 cents.
Hey.
And XLM is still a dime.
Still at 10. I was reading somewhere that XRP is due to have a breakout as well. So there's definitely something going on in the markets now.
I saw something like that as well. I can't remember what I saw, though. Yeah, I thought of you.
Thank you. So today's show is sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, home of Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strains offer elevated experiences with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen's Dragon on X or calling the shop at 530-276-9771.
If you would like to join in on our discussion, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at kcnr1460.com. That's kcnr1460.com.
You know, I should ask, Ben, is the chat up and running today?
It should be.
Okay, cool. Are you managing the chat or you want me to pull that up?
Well, I'm watching it. What do you
okay.
mean?
Terrific. I didn't pull it up on my screen. I think I should do that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for that. So
I'm just supposed to watch it in case somebody says something that they're not supposed to, like a cuss word or something.
They wouldn't do that, would they?
It could happen accidentally.
Ah, absolutely.
Last weekend, we brought you Jack Mahlers' full keynote speech from the recent conference in Prague. Today, we're going to recap some of the most impactful moments from that address. As you'll recall, Mahlers touched on several key points about Bitcoin that we've discussed over the past 2 years on this show. His speech reinforced much of what we already know and offered some compelling news perspectives as well. We've selected a few crucial sound bites that deserve a second listen and further discussion. These clips highlight why continued learning about Bitcoin is essential, why Mailer sees Bitcoin as unique in the cryptocurrency space, and how its proof of work system sets it apart technically. For those of you who missed last week's broadcast or who want to revisit these important points, this is your chance to dive back in. And for everyone, it's an opportunity for us to analyze and reflect on Mailer's words together. Let's get started with our first clip.
Yeah, it's about proof of work, and that's a good place to start.
Outside of Dogecoin, which is invented to be a joke, Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency that uses proof of work. I couldn't believe my eyes in that. Ethereum doesn't use proof of work. Solana doesn't use proof of work. Cardano doesn't use proof of work. And we know this is a recent email that we got from Satoshi Nakamoto, where Satoshi writes, "Unfortunately, proof of work is the only solution I've found to make P2P eCash work without a trusted third party. Even if it wasn't using it for secondarily of a way to allocate the initial distribution of the currency, proof of work is fundamental to coordinating the network and prevent double spending." So I thought to myself, okay, the best way to understand the difference between Bitcoin and the rest of the cryptocurrency world is through proof of work. So I love this quote from my friend Gigi: "A failure to understand proof of work is a failure to understand Bitcoin."
I couldn't agree with that more. What do you think, Peter?
Well, you know, I honestly thought there were more proof-of-work cryptocurrencies besides just Bitcoin and Dogecoin. I thought there was a couple others.
There are, but they aren't in the top 10.
Okay.
Which is on his chart that he had. He looked at the top 10 on CoinMarketCap.
You know,
Litecoin is a proof-of-work, for instance. What is it? Dash is a proof of work.
That's the one that I was thinking of, Dan.
Yes.
Now, the great pyramids of Egypt, the Great Pyramid of Egypt and all the other pyramids for that matter, are proof of work. People who go to the gym and who build muscle strength are engaging in proof of work.
Right.
And, you know, there's when it comes to health, there's really nothing like muscle strength. It's the proof of work or the highway or fluffy, your pick.
Those are good examples. Well, digital representations, while useful, aren't the same as physical reality. We're going to play a clip where Mailer's discusses these abstractions. It's a fascinating take on how we've been taught circuits to reflect complex ideas back to us. I think it's called reiteration. Is creating experiences like Bitcoin, and as we listen, let's consider how this concept shapes our understanding of digital currencies and their real-world impact.
I think what he's trying to say is when they bring the menu to you to decide what to eat for dinner, one of the things that you really can't eat is the menu.
You can't eat the menu. Well, you could try, but I don't recommend it.
I would agree.
So let's go ahead and play.
"The computer screen is a magic window, but it can only reflect back what we put into it. We should not mistake the reflection for reality itself. Virtual representations of reality are not reality itself. They are abstractions." This is a very important point. "They help us understand the real world, but they themselves aren't physically real."
That's huge. You know, Jason Lowry had talked about this, and I somewhat got it. But the way that, and I know that this came from software, from what Jack Mahlers was talking about, but how he put it out there and he showed an icon of a document. And every one of us have seen that classic icon, document icon on our computers. So when we go and click on it, we just assume there's a document there. But that's an abstraction. It's not a document. And in fact, the document that we see is an abstraction. It is not real. That is just like blows my mind, like there is no spoon, right? As he was talking about last week. So I just find that amazing.
It's really makes us think. It really does.
You know, and Lowry also talked about that computer is just a it's a static state computer. So it's simply a switch on, a switch off. That's all it does.
So this is the Tokens Radio Show. You could have so similarly with money, you could have a green piece of paper in your wallet, a U.S. dollar, or you could have a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. I'm going to submit to you that the green piece of paper in your wallet is an abstraction.
Yes.
But if you actually have recorded down the 24 seed phrases, the 24 words that comprise the seed phrase for that dollar's worth of Bitcoin, I'm going to submit to you that that's the actual money, not just a representation. That's it. That's the real deal. It's hard money. The hardest money.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
It's important to know the difference.
I do too.
You could also have a dollar's worth of gold, a tiny little, itsy little speck of gold, but that would be an actual dollar.
Right.
Whereas the green paper, no, the seed phrase that corresponds to a dollar's worth is much, it's really fundamentally identical to the speck of hard metal.
Well, let's take the dollar, let's take that dollar bill, the fiat dollar, and say it was backed by that little speck of gold. That fiat dollar is still an abstraction.
Yes, but at least it's backed by something at that point.
True, true.
Hey, while we're on that very subject of those three things, I want to take this moment to encourage all of our listeners to Google up a graph that that compares the performance of the United States dollar, gold, and Bitcoin going back 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, and the full history of Bitcoin all the way back to the Genesis block, January 3rd, 2009, about 10 o'clock in the morning, California time.
And if that hasn't convinced you that maybe you might want to get a little bit of Bitcoin, I don't know. We're doing the best we can to help you.
People are saying put 1% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. It's not here. It's not enough.
No, it's not.
Why did I do that? That was creepy. It's not enough.
It was very Biden-like.
I know, I said, yuck.
We don't want to whisper. So do you want to introduce the next clip?
Yes. This next clip, Mailers touches on a crucial concept, abstract power in the digital age, by illustrating how social media wields influence without physical boundaries. But he also reminds us of something vital, the reality of our physical existence.
Here we go.
This guy might look familiar, and this is a man with tremendous amounts of abstract power in our abstract world. Why? Mark is the CEO of Meta, formerly Facebook, and it's one of the most popular social media platforms in the world. We live in a digital age and get all of our information, store all of our information, find love, build relationships in this abstracted world. Mark can change the way we think, the way we act, the way we relate to each other. Mark yields a lot of abstracted power in the digital age. But this is a very important subtle point. Mark has no physical power over any of you. It's not physical. However, there are no physical constraints to Mark's power. Do you understand? So abstract power is intangible and often unchecked. So something like social media and something like central banking.
Oh, yes. And he did refer to Janet Yellen in that, is that she has an awful lot of control about printing money. But again, it's abstract power because she's not putting power over us, but the printing of money has a lot of power. The effects of it has quite a bit of power on us in terms of inflation and things of that nature.
I want to talk about this a second.
Absolutely.
You know, our whole lives, there's always been the Federal Reserve, and it was because we were both born after 1913.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up in school and whatnot, I never, ever would have been so iconoclastic or heretical as to think of the Federal Reserve as an abstract, something abstract. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? With a building that looks like that? They build the building.
Right.
And they make up the name of it, Federal Reserve. And for God's sakes, look at that building. That's about as unabstract. That's concrete. I mean, it's literally concrete. But I think that Mallers is calling a spade a spade. Central banking is a made-up, abstract story.
It is.
It's a story.
Yes, just like social media.
Gold isn't a story.
No, it is.
Gold has been money for 5,000 years.
Gold is something you can touch and feel.
And, you know, twice in the last 130 years, our federal government has stepped up to the plate and said, you know what, there's a difference between this kind of money and that kind of money, and under this particular set of circumstances, we're making it such that you guys over there, whether it be the citizens of the United States or all the other countries of the world, you can only have the paper dollars now. That's the only kind you can have. We can have the good kind, but you can't.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Abstract power.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can have the good kind. You know what, Christy? I want the good kind.
Well, that's what we do have, the good kind. We have Bitcoin.
That's even better.
That's even better.
Because it's the storage and the sending, which, you know, we do continuously, all both of those, with money, right?
Right, sure. Yeah, I think that's the best money right there.
So, kaboom.
Kaboom.
Bitcoin is not abstract. It's unconfiscatable. It's permissionless. It's uncensorable. That's very important to us Americans.
Would it be fair to say there is no second best?
It's the most American money in the history of money.
For many years to come until some other invention comes along the way. I mean, gold and silver was found, and we invented a method of trading representations of gold and silver until we got off that standard and we weren't allowed to actually have that backed. But, yeah, it will be way beyond our lifetime and the lifetime of our children and our grandchildren before before anything else is improved upon Bitcoin.
You know, our country just had an IT outage with this CrowdStrike thing, and it was pretty ubiquitous. It hit, you know, airports, hotels, everything. But right when seemingly everything was going to the blue screen of death, my chest swole with pride because I was reminded of how Bitcoin is absolutely the world's most secure computer network in the history of computer networks. It actually seemed to feed off of the outage. It seemed to kind of like pump with pride.
Yes, I agree. And isn't it interesting? As soon as your screen came back up, Bitcoin just keeps moving. In fact, I would suggest that Bitcoin never shut down. It's only one network that they were affected on, and those were Windows-based servers and applications.
Oh, I didn't even realize that there was a blip in the hash rate.
I don't think there was.
Okay.
But there could have been, because it was a global outage.
Understood, right. You just, like, understood.
That should be something. I think we should look that up and see if there was a blip in the hash rate. I do believe, I think that that's why the stock market took a tank this week as well. Could have had some other current events that was also affecting the stock market as well. But Bitcoin did go down, and we'll have to check and see if it was related. Maybe if somebody in the audience can send us a message in the chat or give the station a call, we'd love to hear from you about that.
Yeah, that would be really interesting.
I'm glad we just fleshed that out. So I'm going to introduce our next cut here. Says, now, in this next cut, Mallers explains how Bitcoin proof-of-work system bridges the physical and the digital realms. And he compares this to traditional power structures and reveals how Satoshi Nakamoto's invention imposes real-world cost to protect the network. And Mallers also touches on the energy use and potential risks involved, aspects that have sparked much debate in our community and all around the world, and I just think that's hockey puck, but because that energy needs to be used. But in any case, that's a side comment, and I'm going to go ahead and play this cut. Here we go.
So I don't know if you guys could hear that, but this part was the important part. Adam said, you can cause the system to strain without doing that much work yourself. What does that remind you of? That reminds me of, this is the Treasury of the United States. This is Janet Yellen. The U.S. printing money can cause the system a lot of strain without doing any work themselves. They can cause a lot of inflation and strain on all of us without doing any work. Mark Zuckerberg can change a setting in his dashboard and ruin all of our privacy and ruin all of our lives without doing any work himself, right?
Oh, that's so huge, isn't it?
It really is.
So the actual effort that he took was to put a few keystrokes into an abstract machine, right, which invokes a lot of power on people. But he didn't actually invoke physical power on anybody to do that. He didn't come up to your keyboard and restrain you from being able to participate on social media. He didn't do anything like that. He just simply made a few keystrokes and choke pointed the whole system, or he choke pointed a few people.
Okay, so would that be real power or abstract power?
That's abstract power.
It is actually choke pointing people, but on his relatively abstract platform.
Correct.
All right, now, in the lead-in to this, Christy, you talked about how Satoshi Nakamoto's invention, meaning Bitcoin, imposes right. real-world costs to protect the network. And, you know, I see that you took that from Jason Lowry's book, Soft War.
Right.
And it took me a while to really wrap my head around this whole business about imposing real-world costs on your enemy. But Jason explained it really good in his book, Soft War, which I highly recommend. And I'd like to talk about that. So imposing real world costs. Okay, let's go out to the African Serengeti, and you can see the antelope casually just leaping 12 feet into the air, just casually with each bound. What it's saying to a potential predator is, look at me. I'm casually springing 12 feet into the air. Without even thinking about it, obviously relaxed. Could you imagine if I put all of my energy into going in a straight line? Could you imagine the physical costs that I would impose upon you and tire you out? You might tire yourself out and not catch me. Then you'd be exhausted and hungry. That would really impose a cost on you. And similarly, let's go now to the Middle Ages. The king builds a castle. Around the castle, he builds a moat. Why put huge amounts of time, energy, and money into building that moat? It doesn't really do anything. It's just there. Well, if you suddenly are attacked by an army, you're imposing a severe physical cost. They have to swim through
that's right.
And that's a pretty stinky body of water there too. That's a severe physical cost. That's just not like
it may have man-eating things in there too.
Right. And it may also double as the sanitation system.
It could.
So that's a really severe physical cost.
Right.
And that's how security works. It's just how it does. And so people are critical of the proof of work aspect of Bitcoin because it is so energy intensive. But that's the whole point.
Yes.
Is that it is energy intensive. Electricity is good.
It is good.
Very
absolutely.
Good.
Yes, and we need to produce more of it and be able to distribute more of it. So we need to upgrade our grids and be grid-hardened so that we can harness all of this wonderful energy that we know how to produce.
And, boy, we don't really feel very grid-hardened this week, do we?
No, we don't. No, that was just quite a wake-up call. So we have one more cut, and it is about 2 minutes long. So I think we can get it in before the break. What do you think, Ben? We got it.
I'll let it pass.
Okay, let's let it pass.
What makes Bitcoin stand out in the world of cryptocurrencies? Mallers offers a fascinating perspective on Bitcoin's relationship with power, not the kind you might expect. He explains how Bitcoin uses electrical energy rather than traditional forms of power to protect wealth. He highlights how this approach, rooted in our proof of work and the laws of physics, fundamentally differentiates Bitcoin from other cryptocurrencies. He compares Bitcoin's proof of work system to Ethereum's proof of stake. I thought it.
Yep.
I just did a Freudian slip on myself. I thought it said Ethereum's proof of fake.
Well, there you go.
highlighting how Bitcoin's physical connection makes it more secure and fair. Mailers argues that while Ethereum leads in tokenization, Bitcoin's unchanging nature and unique proof-of-work system make it the only true contender in the cryptocurrency space.
Here we go.
Proof of work is proof of real. Proof of stake is proof of rank, okay? Proof of stake is abstracted reality. And that abstracted reality, as we went over, yields a lot of abstracted power. So like when the U.S. left the gold standard, they went from physical reality as being backed by gold and bounded to the physical constraints of the universe to an abstracted reality that can sanction any country and print money out of thin air. These old coins don't use proof of work. They are not bounded to the physical world. So they've gone from physical reality in the Ethereum merge to abstracted reality. Now, this is a trippy question you should ask yourself late at night. Is Ethereum physically real? Security. Now, there's the reason I did this presentation, one of, is there's all this altcoin ETF hype and stuff, right? What ETF approval could mean for Ethereum? Here's another important point about security and proof of work in the physical world. There is nothing physically, so like this, physical, preventing anyone from gaining control over a non-proof of work system, right? Think of it, look at abstract power again, okay? When Hitler tried to 51% attack planet Earth, and I know that's a crazy example, but it's a real one. All the honest actors in the system, all the honest humans on planet Earth were able to summon enough physical power to protect ourselves. So as long as the honest people in the system of humanity was able to summon enough physical power to thwart off an actor that tried to 51% attack us, we're safe. The same goes for Bitcoin in a proof of work system, right? Any BlackRock, any Michael Saylor that tries to attack us, it doesn't matter how many coins they have, we can physically protect ourselves because we're connected to the physical world with physical power, and we can do it in a way that's safe and energy efficient. Makes sense, right? In a proof of stake system, there is no unbounded way to protect yourself. It's proof of rank. You're trusting that the people high up are going to follow the rules and do a good job.
We'll take a break and continue our conversation when we return. You're listening to the Tokens Radio Show on KCNR 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. See you in a few minutes.
Luxurious bliss with Pinnacle Cultivators, Redding's premier licensed legacy cultivator exclusively at the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake. Pinnacle's carefully crafted, expertly curated flower guarantees an exceptional experience with rare genetics and distinctive flavors, freshly packaged daily for a genuine farm-to-table experience. Visit 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-276-9771 for delivery and hours of operation. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragons.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Wind River Resort and Casino is about to make your summer sizzle
with our $100,000 Bronco Bucks Swipe to Win draw.
Swipe your River Club card daily to win free drawing entries or other instant prizes.
Your Thursdays just got way more thrilling with our weekly drawings kick off at 7 p.m.
Mark your calendars for the final drawing on August 29th for your shot at cold hard cash.
For a 2024 Ford Bronco.
For complete details, visit windriver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Find your moments at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Wildfire season is upon us. Being prepared saves lives. Develop and practice an evacuation plan with your household. Stay informed about local fire conditions and follow evacuation orders if issued. Know your evacuation zone. Go to shascom911.com. Click on Be Prepared, Know Your Zone. Type in your address and write it down in case of emergency. You can also sign up for Alert Shasta at ShastaCom911.com.
Hold on, I'm coming. That's a great song. And I think that spells a lot for what's coming our way. A lot of breaking news today, too. So, and I'm sure this is off topic, but I'm sure the people have read or have heard that President Biden has removed himself from the race. He will finish his term, but he will not seek re-election.
And he has named a successor.
Yes. He has Ms. Kamala Harris or Mrs. Harris.
That's right.
Wait. This is the first time hearing. Is this confirmed?
It's all over the internet.
Oh,
and
wow.
Trump has also commented on it.
That's debatably better for our chances of winning then.
We will see. You know, Ben, like we were talking in here, I hope you have a big bowl of popcorn as you watch this show unroll. Unveil itself over here in the next few months. It's going to be interesting.
I'm not a very political guy. I'm an independent, but I'm definitely right-leaning, and it's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. A little scary, too.
Well, it's good that the elder abuse at least has an end in sight.
Yes, that has been painful to watch. So before we went to break, we were playing some clips from Jack Mahler's keynote speech. Bitcoin, there's nothing second best. So there is no second best, is what I'm trying to say. And we ended that on a 2-minute soundbite talking about how he compares Bitcoin's proof of work system to Ethereum's proof of stake, and how Bitcoin's physical connection makes it more secure and fair. And Ethereum, he even broached the fact that, is it even real? Like, is it a fake? We have some comments about that.
And, of course, I couldn't help myself from making a Freudian slip calling it a fake because it was just bubbling to the surface there.
Yeah. Well, once upon a time, it would have been right up there with Bitcoin because it was a proof of work.
I remember that. And it was like it was proof of work. It was like Bitcoin, but with features.
Right. And then they made a conversion and made it proof of stake. And somehow it is still considered a commodity. I don't know how that happened, but, you know, there's very powerful people in Congress. And so somewhere along the line, they gave Ethereum a pass.
Yeah, a commodity that you can make as much as you want at any given time,
right,
if you're in control.
Yes.
And you can also erase other people's.
And you can buy in to be a validator. So you just can't buy into Bitcoin network and verify the network. You need to mine. You actually need to put in energy and have machinery and all of that working to win the block reward. All of that went away with Ethereum.
So you were just operationally defining the difference between proof of work and proof of stake.
Correct.
So let me recite what you just said. Bitcoin, which is one of the few true, which is the only uncensorable cryptocurrency that has no issuer, and it has all of the other...
Decentralized.
It's decentralized, unconfiscatable, permissionless. There is no second best. So the way that it works is the work that's involved is all of the Bitcoin miners in the world start a competition every 10 minutes, and essentially what they have to do is guess a number. And the number has to be between this number and that number. And that range gets adjusted every 2 weeks,
yes,
depending on how many competitors there are right. in the race.
That's why we don't know the beginning number or that number, because it could be very complex, like how many zeros that number is going to have. Right?
So right, so it's said that the Bitcoin miners have to solve a puzzle as though it's some complicated, like enigmatic, intricate Byzantine puzzle. No, it's just a number. You guess the number, and then the nanosecond you guess the number correctly, the Bitcoin network recognizes that and instantly notifies all the other miners, "Up, somebody won this 10 minutes, so it's all over now." But you have to guess, and it takes a lot of electricity to do that, which is a good thing. Now, the proof of stake ones, what the way that that works is, it's like, well, if you have a bunch of this stuff and you put up your stake and you lock it up on the network, then you get certain powers to control that network. And that's all fine and dandy, except that it allows the monkeys to run the show.
So you're suggesting it's for those who have the haves rather
right.
than the have-nots.
Right.
And it's so if you happen to have 32 ETH.
And you know, it's a continuous... Yeah. Sort of a perfect petri dish for conspiracies, for cabals, for cronyism of all types. Whereas Bitcoin, on the other hand, is resistant to all of that. It's uncensorable. It's so decentralized, it can't be controlled by anybody or anything ever. It's gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. Well, we should probably leave it there, and all I can say is if you'd like to hear the keynote speech, you can go back to the archives at kcnr1460.com, go to the Tokens Radio Show tab, and pick up last week's show from the 14th of July, and it will have the entire keynote speech, or you could just put it in your search engine, Jack Mahler's Bitcoin Prague 2024, and it will pull it up. The video where you can see Jack giving this presentation.
And right as soon as you finish that one, you're going to want to similarly search for Michael Saylor's
yes.
talk at 2024 Prague,
yes.
which, in my opinion, was every bit as good as Jack's talk,
yeah.
if not better.
I would agree with that. Saylor never disappoints, but neither does Jack Mahler's either. He just has a lot of snark that goes with his keynote speech. So, you know, there's been some news coming out about the BRICS countries. And BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And they're making bold moves in the global financial arena, partially, you know, to combat the United States dollar, the dollar being, you know, the fiat dollar being the world's reserve currency. They don't like that with all of the power that our country can wield over their countries. And so they formed this block of countries that basically want to opt out of our system of payment processing and using our currency. And they're working out how they can use their currencies within their own countries. And what was interesting, and we've talked quite a bit about how the BRICS – countries want to create a currency backed by dollar, and that's been pretty much what the news has been.
Wait, the BRICS countries want to create a currency that's
backed by gold.
Because you just said, I think.
Oh, did I say by the dollar?
Yes.
That was a Freudian slip.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Backed by gold. Okay.
That was kind of like calling your vice president Trump.
My apologies, everybody, but thanks for catching that, Peter. But really where the news is on this is that what they're developing is a new payment processing.
Oh, and I'm sorry, that was mean, but I didn't intend it to be mean to you. I did intend it to be mean, but
I didn't take it that way. So this is key because we've been focusing on their new currency. But no, they haven't really put that into play yet. What they have put into play is a payment processing system that competes against SWIFT. Now, SWIFT is the global payment processing system between banks. Okay, so in fact, we all have experienced what SWIFT is, and we get a little frustrated with it at times. It might take a week or two for a check that we write here, and we send somebody into another country, and it has to do so many hops through banks, and it runs through this system called SWIFT. It might be a wire from here to another country that might take a week or so to clear. SWIFT. However, SWIFT also has a lot of power. They can actually shut down payments to a country. Maybe a country. Now, SWIFT, by the way, is predominantly United States controlled, even though it is originated out of the Bank of International Settlements, okay, BIS. However, it's globally controlled primarily by us because we have the world reserve currency. We can choke point another country. We can sanction them very easy by shutting off their.
And we did that for Russia.
And so what have they done?
Well, do you think Russia was just going to roll over and say, oh, well, the United States has cut us out of SWIFT, so we just won't trade anymore? I mean, is that how superpowers work? No.
Well, no, and they've had just enough of it. So not only did they form a BRICS, a block of countries, and the countries are growing, by the way, and you know what? There's word out there that Saudi Arabia is about to join them. Now, Saudi Arabia is a very interesting play. But here's what the system is, and we'll talk about Saudi Arabia in just a moment and why that is so significant. But the system that they're going to use is called Mbridge. So it's Mbridge, which is their payment processing system, which will allow those countries to use the currencies, their country's currencies, and they will run through this payment processing system, and it is cryptocurrency-based, and it runs on Ethereum.
Yikes.
That is huge. So they're going to basically create their own CBDC, their central bank digital currency. And by the way, this isn't really as scary as a retail CBDC like for you and me. That is terrible, okay? Because this control thing's already been going on in SWIFT. Okay, so really, it's pretty much about the same in my view.
Okay,
so, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd like to just chat a little bit about,
yeah.
I'm wondering to myself why you, Christy, are so fascinated by this Mbridge. Well, the Mbridge is the delivery system for their new made-up BRICS currency. So, you know, drugs and money is kind of like the same. You can have a manufacturer can have a drug, but then they have to have delivery systems. It could be a pill, it could be intravenous, it could be something to be shot into a muscle, it could be transdermal delivery system or other. Similarly with money, you know, you have to have a delivery system. Now, gold was its own delivery system, but the United States dollar is a made up entity, and the delivery system, you know, one of the delivery systems is SWIFT.
Right.
And so here BRICS is going to make up their own money, but the significance of Mbridge is it's their delivery system, and the money or the drug is really only as good as the delivery system.
Well, you had said make up their own money. They haven't done that yet, but these countries have been trading in current cryptocurrencies. So whatever cryptocurrency du jour that they happen to pick, this Mbridge system can process that.
That's just crazy.
And it's real. And you can go to the Bank of International Settlements and read on this. This was huge news. When I read this today, it didn't hit me that way that it's all about the payment processing. We've talked about that on the retail side of things and Operation Choke Point and all of that. But, gosh, this is like global play. This is country to country. We've been doing it with SWIFT, and now they have countered that.
So in getting ready for the show today, I realized that I did not intuitively at the tip of my tongue know the answer to a question. And the question I asked myself is, what is the big deal if the United States dollar loses a little bit of market share? So in other words, so what if Saudi Arabia doesn't denominate its oil in U.S. dollars. So what? What's the big deal? And the answer that I gave myself is, and I ran it past you before the show, is that whatever product or service or currency that you're using, the name of the game is to get market share, to make yours be the dominant one, whether it be Facebook or Amazon or Bitcoin or in the fiat world, the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar is the world's dominant currency of all types, the most dominant
reserve currency. Yeah.
And so what BRICS is trying to do, they're trying to make their own money, but along with it, a delivery system, this Enbridge thing, so that people will use it. Because once they can get people to use it, then boom, the adoption is the dominance. Adoption equals dominance.
Well, and the adoption, you're right, but it's not so much, I think when you're talking about people, are you talking about their central banks?
Yeah, countries. Countries.
Right. So just to be clear, this is a central bank play. This is not going to affect you or me, you know, Peter or Christie directly. It's going to affect the banks that we deal with. Okay, so that is bank-to-bank situation. So what's key is you mentioned Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia just allowed the petrodollar contract to expire. Okay,
it has been a decade ago.
It has been expired, but they've never renewed it, and they have just not going to. Okay, and it's a significant play because now they can decide to trade oil and fiat if they wish, or their own currency, or use this Enbridge system in cryptocurrencies. So it's basically bye bye, United States. We're not going to trade in your dollars, which is significant against the power of our country. It just has leveled the playing field a little bit more for these other countries to where the United States can't wield as much control on them.
It's kind of like when you imprison an individual, incarcerate an individual in the United States, and then you let him out of prison, but without giving him job training or a job opportunity, he's essentially forced to go into a life of crime. Similarly, when we cut Russia out of SWIFT, we did the same thing. Like, what did we expect them to do? Roll over? Really? Russia?
But they've been working on this for years. It's just fortunate that we've been hearing about it the last couple of years. But this has been a play that's been going on for a number of years. Very long. And somewhere along the line, I've read that it has something to do with the Great Recession that we had in 2008.
And, you know, as I sit here and just listen to my thoughts out loud, you know, Russia in the last year or two really hasn't been in a rolling over kind of a modality, have they? Quite au contraire.
Right.
They've taken the modality, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, they have definitely settled the score. They're even making the playing field much more fair. So what does this have to do with Bretton Woods? What's your thoughts on that? You know, Bretton Woods was an agreement that how we got on the petrodollar, and Peter mentioned just a little bit ago that this had expired maybe 10 years ago. However, the Bretton Woods was when we stopped backing our dollar and gold, and we said, petrodollar. That was a gift that Richard Nixon gave us.
I can't recite the story of Bretton Woods enough times. So
take it away.
The nanosecond that we became back-to-back World War champs here in the United States after having perfected the art of money printing and translating that into war machines better than any other country, we assembled the leaders of 70 countries at a ski resort in New Hampshire, and we for the purpose of deciding on the world's new reserve currency. And there were two proposals, one being made by the United States, and I think that was articulated by Harry Dexter White, and the other one being articulated by Maynard Keynes himself.
Okay.
Now, Harry Dexter White was putting forth the United States dollar, and Harry Dexter said, come on, guys, look, the United States has two-thirds of the world gold already, and, you know, anytime you want an ounce of that gold, you just bring us 35 of those little green pieces of paper, and we promise you that we'll give you an ounce of gold. Right. Promise. It's as good as gold. Whereas Maynard Keynes' idea, which was probably a better idea, was a basket of currencies. It required much more abstraction and probably a lot more technical expertise, and people really couldn't wrap their head around that. So they went with the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. Boom. That was a premier example. So it was tied to gold, but instantly we made we abused our exorbitant privilege, as it was called, right, by the dilemma guy, the Triffin, right? And we just started printing money, and the next thing you know, we're, you know, to a little foray in Korea, not as bad as the Vietnam money printing that went on, and all of the social programs started by Roosevelt and others. And once we just started printing, the other countries saw what was going on. I think Switzerland got $50 million worth out, and then France famously pulled a battleship into New York Harbor and loaded up with $150 million worth of gold and set sail back for the mother country, for the homeland. And that was at the point where Tricky Dick said, you know what, that's enough. And on a Sunday night, oh, my God, on a Sunday, I guess that's the day when you pull this stuff, right, always on a Sunday.
Yeah, or a Friday evening, you know, a slow news cycle.
And he got on the air, and he broke his promise to people thousands of miles away, which is easy to do. And at that point, then, we had to go on the petrodollar. So we come up to Saudi Arabia and go, hey, Saudi Arabia, we got a deal for you. Look, we'll give you free military. We'll help you with all of that hundreds of years old conflict that you're having over there. We'll help you out. Just one little thing, a couple little things, really. Please promise to denominate oil in U.S. dollars henceforth, and don't tell anybody, but turn around and take all those U.S. dollars and buy treasuries. Just don't say anything, though, to anybody. And that was it. And that all that went fine until they backed out.
Yes. Now, where do you think that the Great Recession fit into all of this?
The Great Recession being 2008?
Well, I think it started beforehand, but it just took a couple of years before it just bottomed out, where something had to be said about it, like, we have no more money to pay anything now. Remember George Bush coming out like we're having a existential threat right now to our country, and you know we have to do something right now because the financial system is about ready to collapse. But 2 years prior to that was a huge indicator.
What year did he say that?
2008.
Okay. Yes.
in fact, this is when we had billions. Okay, when we were billions in deficit, not trillions to where we are now. I mean, they were talking about $900 billion in deficit, and oh my gosh, everything's going to implode, and we have to do something. And so, who was the reserve guy?
Ben Bernanke.
Yes, he came in and saved the day with his quantitative easing and turned on the printer press. And then Obama came in and tinkered with the economy in some fascinating way that we're still dealing with.
But that man could talk.
Yes, he could talk. Yes, indeed. So I have a question for you. Kind of taking a pivot here. I don't know how long we'll be able to talk about this. We may have to come and pick it up next week. But do you think that there's a distinction between a digital wallet and the assets that they contain?
Well, yeah. I mean, the wallet is the wallet. It's the container. It's the conveyor. And the assets are the assets. In the case of Bitcoin, they're the currency, the hardest currency in the history of human civilization. And those are two very, very different things. You could take that hardest asset in the history of human civilization and move it around to multiple wallets, thereby filling or emptying each wallet along the way, and also illustrating the difference between the wallet and the contents.
So let's take it a step further. Let's say you pass away and you have digital assets in said digital wallet. Is that one and of the same? If your heirs receive that wallet, is it assumed that they get the contents as well?
Well, I don't really see how it's any different than, say, a bank account. And in a will, you'd say, I leave this bank account number 12345 at the Main Street Bank at 123 Main Street to my son, Joe Blow, you know, whatever. And similarly, with Bitcoin, you can say, I leave this number of BTC in such and such a wallet, you know, to my daughter, Julie Doe.
So child A can have the wallet and child B can have the contents.
Well, that's where did this come from?
Well, I'll share with you next week because I think we're coming up to the end of the show, aren't we, Ben? How much more time do we have?
We have 15 seconds.
Oh,
the light wasn't working.
Leave it there. So hopefully we can talk with you next week about what's going on in Santa Monica. It's huge, and we've been kind of chomping at the bit to talk with you about it, but we're not quite ready yet. So, but we're coming up at the end of the show. We want to thank you for joining us today, and come back and see us next week on KC.